Wait, did you hear?
No.
We're diving into the juiciest celebrity profiles of all time.
I'm Beatrice Hazelhurst.
And I'm Ivana Ryder.
This is Uncover Girl.
In the last 24 hours, my entire life has turned around.
Tell me.
I have an apartment. I have a job.
Stop.
I have a teapot that I made in pottery.
The teapot is the most shocking of all the revelations. I couldn't believe you made that with your hands.
I made that with my hands. I threw it on the wheel. And I can't wait. I'm actually going to make the little lid a flower. So it's like when you like put it down, you're like putting a little flower down, face down.
Get out of town.
That's what I'm going to do. And I think I'm going to make it pink and green. Cutie little something. For you, probably, with your fairy energy, as foretold by my foretold by the psychic at my bachelorette party.
I'm thinking now that she got me so wrong, because I recently found out, I don't know if I've told you this even.
Oh my God,
a true reveal. Yeah. I am not a Pisces rising, as I once thought.
Oh my God. Life altered.
My full identity of being like, when you first meet me, I'm super sweet. And then you get to the dark, rotten core of my Scorpio sun. I am, in fact, an Aries rising.
See? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It tracks. It's a hard pill for me to swallow.
Yeah.
I did text a friend who I know to be an Aries, and he immediately said, I am a triple Aries, which made me feel a little bit safer. But my God, it's a fiery sign that I really didn't associate with until now.
It also makes so much sense. The only Aries I know will wake up and be like, I'm going to actually bike 70 miles today. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do to stop me.
Yeah. It's very attack the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sort of like, how could I do something to the nexus, to the extreme?
Yeah, totally. But I'm getting much better. I used to take myself to the extreme often, like, yeah, overbook myself, or, you know, just go way too hard, and then I would become overwhelmed, stressed. I don't know if it's the welly bee or what it is, but I just am coasting now. Like, yesterday was a prime example of, like, I got up at 5:30,
oh my God,
went to the gym, drove to work, worked a full day, multiple meetings and such, and then came home at 7 and had a dinner party at 7:30 that was hosted at my home. And in any other context, I also made a dessert the minute I got home.
Of course.
In any other context, that would have been hard, yeah, on the old noggin, on the emotional, physical wellness center. But I just have learned, because life has been so full on, to let go. You just gotta let go.
Yeah. You might as well enjoy it. It's like, what, am I going to be stressed because I've been doing something every hour on the hour?
Surrender to the chaos. The other thing I keep thinking, this is the most helpful thing. I know there's a whole, like, you have as many hours in the day as Beyonce, but truly imagining women on tour is what gets me through anything, any itinerary, any schedule, just because I'm like, they have it so tough.
Yes.
They have it so tough. Their entire hour to hour is scheduled. They are performing at a moment's notice. They're doing press, everything. Because we're journalists and we are so akin to those girls, like, we really catch them in those moments really often. We like get to see behind the curtain, and that is helping me. Like, I now I'm not never like, oh, I could never do that. I'm just like, yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
And that can get me through today.
I agree completely. And the other thing is that they are not at home. There are no comforts of home. There are no animals to return to. There is nothing that stays. I feel like that would really rock me.
They are packing and unpacking every single day.
Yeah, that's, and I mean, I've been living out of a suitcase for the past month.
Yeah.
So I feel closer to them now. But even that is like, I'm living out of a suitcase, but in the same place, at least.
Yeah, there's some sense of stability.
Yeah.
So that's really pulling me through.
Yeah.
And helping me navigate the complete identity shift that is Aries rising.
Oh my God.
I know. A fire sign? Me?
You? with that fiery red hair.
Outrageous.
Oh my god. Oh wait, what's inspiring you this week?
Oh, I've never been so ready for an inspiration. Okay. You know, sometimes we're riffing, sometimes we just have nothing at all.
Yeah.
I am so prepared.
Yeah.
I even wrote it down. I thought about it over and over again to cement it into the memory. This is so incredibly applicable to the pod, the Argos, our ether at large. So the inspiration is tenacity of men. And I'm going to explain why.
Yeah, please.
It started on Sunday when I went for a jog and I crossed the road and I happened to, in my diagonal sort of perpendicular shape of crossing the road, kind of come out ahead of a male runner, maybe like 10 yards or something. Totally fine. I plow on. This man seems to think in this moment that I am racing him.
No.
For the next mile, he is neck and neck with me. And I'm not talking like he passes me and then I'm like, oh, there's that guy. And then I pass him running beside me.
No.
Running beside me to the point that I put my foot on the gas and literally start sprinting.
Yeah.
Because it started to just piss me off to no level. But I just thought, your ego is so fragile that you had to race a woman?
A stranger
on
to
a
you.
Sunday morning?
Oh my God.
Down Franklin the entire way. Entire way. From literally from Griffith Park to Schwartz and Sandys. This man he's got me in a lockstep chokehold trying to overtake me.
Oh my God.
It wasn't my intention to cross the road where I came out a little bit in front of him across the road, but here we are. Okay, that's number one. There's so much more to come. So much more to come.
Yeah.
This is another, I mean, it sounds like I'm literally running all the time, but I swear to God, this is like the two in the past couple of weeks. But I was in, we've been in a heat wave this week in Los Angeles, and I wore some shorts, inadvisable, small shorts to run because I was hot. And I think
that's your right. I think that's fine.
It's funny that you'd say that. Chris also said the same. I was quick to victim blame and being like, well, I shouldn't have worn the damn shorts. Like, you know, but
it's on me in the end.
But I was running down Sunset and this guy starts leering like at me and like yelling. And I can't hear what he's saying, but he's literally, his car is stopped at the traffic light. He's looking at me and yelling. Can't hear. I have my headphones in. So I give him the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Grave, grave error. What ends up happening for the next, I don't know, five blocks is him trying to match my pace. So he is like following me down like the busiest road. I mean, everyone's heard of Sunset Boulevard. Mm-hmm. It is a 4-lane, sometimes 5-lane street which runs the entirety of Los Angeles. It's busy and people are going 60 miles an hour down that bitch.
Yeah.
He is following me, trying to keep pace with me, and obviously has to speed up eventually, pulls into a side street to try and cut me off.
No, yep. No. Yep. No.
I had to just do a quick, I literally did a 180 and ran the opposite way.
Yeah.
But I was like, this man was so committed to the bit because I don't know, bruised his ego by flipping him off, that he risked his own life, his own well-being and the safety of others to try and like, get one up on me. It was so bizarre.
Also, like, what was the plan? He cuts you off on the side street and kills you?
That, I mean, it was light out. I think someone might have seen.
Unbelievable. License plate visible.
But I got home and I, like, had a conflicting reaction from Chris because he was like, I don't think you can run on main roads anymore. And I was like, well, the city is full of main roads. It's just,
where am I to go?
Where am I to go? And I was like, no, it's the shorts. Like, I shouldn't have worn the shorts. I actually just went on Nike and bought some, like, actual proper running shorts. So I will be free. And he was like, but you should be able to wear the shorts. And I was like, ah, Chris, that's just not how it works. He was like, you deserve to wear the shorts without harassment. And I was like,
putting his pink pussy hat on for the day. 100.
This pussy grabs back.
Yeah. Ruth Bader Ginsburg pin on.
The feminist of our generation. And I was like, look, this is the reality. Okay. The third will shock you to your core.
Oh my God.
Now you remember how
I'm lightheaded. I have to say I'm lightheaded.
You remember on our Anne Hathaway episode that I recounted walking to the farmer's market on a Sunday morning.
Yes.
And a man in a white Tesla pulling over and asking me if I was single. I came home on cloud nine, absolutely skipping. Couldn't wait to tell you. We proved the comfy clothes theory. All was well. He did it to me again.
The same man?
The same man, the same line, the same car, the same area.
Was everything. It like, hey, following up? Or was it like...
Nope, didn't recognize me.
Oh.
Pulled over God. And said, hey, are you single by any chance? The same exact line. And this is what I mean when I say tenacity.
What?
I said, bro. I got down to brass tacks.
Of course.
Bro, you have literally done this to me 2 weeks ago. Do you just do this? And he was like, no, no. And I was like, well, I'm not. And he's like, okay. And sped off. And I was like, what in the world?
I don't believe him. I think he's doing this.
But is he just crawling the streets? Like prowling to try and find any woman outside? Which, let's be real, in Los Angeles is also hard to find. There are not a lot of girls walking.
I know. You and I are the only pedestrians in this town. We insist on being pedestrians in this town. I know. Honestly, risking our lives every day. The amount of times I've almost been mowed down, I'm watching someone approach a light on their phone, and I'm like, okay, it's lights out very soon if you don't look up.
Yes, yes. Can you believe that?
No. It feels like a lightning strike twice. I feel like if you were single, I wonder how toxic we could get about it. Of like, what are the odds? Like, he could, I mean.
Yeah.
He's your soul. This is like a TikTok video waiting to happen where it's like, oh my God, guess what, girls?
If it was a different line, I think I could be more romantic about it.
Yeah.
If he was just like, wait, I feel like I've seen you before.
Yes.
I would love to take you out. They're like, hey, are you single by any chance? It's just so specific.
Also, I just wish he had looked at your face hard enough the first time.
But I was wearing a cap.
I guess, but that feels very Clark Kent. It's like, you're not unrecognizable
right.
in a pair of glasses or a little cap.
Me thinking I'm a full celebrity. Yeah. I'm going incognito mode. Leonardo DiCaprio at Coachella.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
Blacked out windows.
With a cap on. Yeah, so those are my three experiences. And my fourth is even more recent. And proves my point further. I have a friend whose name I definitely won't mention for her safety, but she is like an online celebrity of sorts. And she's very outspoken. I would say a loudmouth woman to incels.
Perfect.
Yeah. So her and I were texting about hanging out this week and didn't hear back from her. Woke up in the morning to 3 Ring camera videos. She had been swatted. Do you know what swatting is?
Yes, I do.
She had been swatted.
Oh my God.
So for those who don't know, it's like doxing taken to a slightly more, or it's a very more extreme level. Doxing is basically when you have your personal information published online, and it's usually by angry fans or, you know, just generally people who kind of hate you. And it happens to celebrities and especially journalists a lot. This girl kind of crosses those two worlds. Swatting used to be a method of kind of like pranking someone, of like, we're going to call in a fake incident to mobilize SWAT teams, which is insane.
Yeah.
First of all,
it's like one of the most dangerous things ever.
Well, so the original intention for swatters was like, can we do this? Like, can we pull it off? Especially like, to celebrities, like if we find their address and we manage to swat them, like job well done, I'm going to post on Reddit, like killed it. It's reached a new level now because of, I mean, incredibly high mortality rates of people who come into contact with police. The new kind of ethos goal is to get someone killed, which is so highly likely when it comes to policemen, especially SWAT teams. So what happened to her was at 5:30 a.m., her boyfriend hears residents of this address come out with your hands up. He wakes up to floodlights through the windows of their home. He comes out, but literally he's wearing boxer shorts, and they handcuff him. He gets thrown against a police car, and then she comes down fully naked, and my God, she looks gorgeous. Body yeah. looks sick. She has a gun because she's been robbed before in her home. So she comes down. She comes down. She grabs a gun.
Oh, my God.
Comes down the stairs fully naked. Gun, no clothes. Any other context? A total fantasy written by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's Lara Croft.
And her body looks sick on the ring camera, let me tell you. She's covering her boobs, but my God. The body is giving. Yeah. She puts the gun down. Because she sees like floodlights and she's like, fuck, it's the police. Like, if I pull a gun, I'm dead.
Yeah.
She like pokes her head around the window. She's like, what's going on? They're like, ma'am, get out of the house. She's also handcuffed. She's like, I've got no clothes on. They're like, go get clothes on, then come down. She gets handcuffed next to her boyfriend. And they proceed to search the house for evidence of a dead body. Basically, what was called in was, hi, I've just shot my wife and she's not responding. And they are basically like clear in every room, come out, she said, with palpable disappointment. And she's just like, what is going on here? And they were like, well, we got this, you know, anonymous call from a Google number, untraceable. And that's like why we descended. They were probably 30 cops. When I show you these videos, you will be shocked. Maybe I should show you one actually, because I can pull it up so easily.
That's the most terrifying thing.
You will be shocked, your core. Do you want to see the yes. naked one? See the. Okay, I'm showing you now. All right. This is her. This is the cops storming. I think this is going to shock you. So you just see them. They're like little army men. And there are tens of them. Coming up to her.
Like little bugs.
Yeah. Like full weapons out. Like guns drawn with their torches on. This is her ring camera. This is her boyfriend. How?
Oh,
it's like a movie.
My God.
You can hear him speak, but I don't have the audio on. But he's like literally like hands up. Yeah. Yep. And like he was like, thank God I was in boxes because there was no chance I could have like concealed a weapon.
Yeah.
And then this is her poking her head out. Gorgeous body.
Yeah, looking amazing.
Abs, everything. Like
the things we go through.
Like that is I've never heard of that happening to anyone. I wasn't even familiar with the term. It's so scary. And again, tenacity of men to go to this extent to forget docs, like ruin a woman's life. It's like they just know when they – it's the perfect embodiment of if he wants to, he will. If he wants to, he will. Because yeah. I don't know if men have ever worked so hard at anything.
No. This is all such shocking information.
I'm sorry. I've given you some.
I'm aghast. Everyone just needs to cool it.
Can everyone cool it?
Everyone needs to cool it. You do not need to be doing all that. You do not need to be racing on a Sunday morning. It's not a threat to you if a woman's running in front of you.
Nope.
You don't need to kill a woman for flipping you off.
Nope.
You don't need to kill a woman for being online.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You don't need to pull over and ask someone for their information twice.
No.
That is kind of, I know the swatting is fucking insane, but that one specifically, because I brought it up and because I was so proud. It's just too weird. Like, how weird is that he would like find me again?
No.
Once again on the street. What am I learning from this?
It's off the street.
Off the street? But then even if you're off the street, you're in your own home.
I know. There's no safe harbor.
No is safe.
Oh my God.
So anyway, that is my doctrine.
Yeah.
That my religion now.
Oh my God.
In this essay, I will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the only thing left to ask is what's inspiring
you? Oh my God. Oh my God.
You're like my teapot?
Yeah, it's like I went for ice cream last night and I actually did get the double scoop. I thought, why not? Let's celebrate.
Live on the edge.
What is inspiring me? I feel like I also have a list, but my list is unrelated to each other.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
Right.
And silly. Perfect. Yours were all like thematic, important, serious.
Like, I mean, beyond serious. But basically, can I take away just for one more
second? Of course. No, please.
The tenacity of men is inspiring me myself to be more tenacious.
Yeah.
And to prove that, and in proof of, just keep going after what you want.
Yeah.
You want it, make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
never
yeah.
stop.
Yeah. No, there's no reason to. Take it to the furthest that you can.
No reason the not Aries, to, you mean?
the new Aries moon.
Sun's rising.
Sun rising.
Oh my God. Oh my. Our big three.
Fucked it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know. I would love if anyone knows anything.
About the Aries rising?
About rising specifically. I'm a Gemini rising and I feel lost.
Yeah, that feels I don't know enough brand for you. Although Gemini risings are famously very bright individuals.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But
and like conversational, like can work a room.
Yeah, absolutely. But I know you don't really align with Gemini, traditional Gemini qualities to me.
Yeah.
You won't kind of cut a bitch the way
that. No, my grandma is a Gemini. My grandma and my grandpa are both Geminis. They're like a couple days apart and my parents are both Cancers. And that's like always been the... It's pretty crazy.
Air and water, like they bring no benefit to each other.
No, and that's clear.
Okay, give me a lighthearted inspiration.
Okay, one, I've been seeing, speaking of Teslas, I've been seeing Cybertrucks around. And to me, they are the new angel numbers. I feel that it is my ancestors giving me a little chuckle every time I see them. I'm like, oh, it's good luck.
Stop.
I think they are the funniest thing that's ever happened.
It is hilarious to me that people have been on a wait list for that hunk of junk.
Hunk of junk.
That Hot Wheels come to life.
Yeah.
Bug on the road.
It's
for years.
It's hilarious. And the people driving them, I saw one recently and the guy, it was sort of like a miscommunication that you can't clear up in real time where I, because also when they're passing, I'm staring and I'm laughing out loud.
Of course.
And the guy clearly thought that it was kind of like a like hi hottie and I was like no I'm laughing at you and I'm laughing at your family and I'm laughing at the way you were raised that brought you to this moment. I'm laughing at you.
Yeah. But that's dangerous territory as we've learned.
I know. No, actually, I mean, yeah,
but I think your inspiration is my inspiration, which is kind of like the male ego.
Yeah,
because have you seen a woman in one of those things?
No. And the other, actually, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it's about men today, because my other inspiration was going to be that Steven went and got his wedding tux and we like went in together. I drank a glass of rosé as like all the details got picked out, like the little lining and the thing.
So you're allowed to see it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's also seen my wedding dress. We have no
secret. Not on, right?
No, not on.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
on.
That's sick. I think I'd do the same. I'd be like, do you love it?
Yeah. Amazing, right? Well, I guess no, he's seen photos of me in it. But he's not seen me live in
person. He's seen photos?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where I draw the line.
No, I know.
I have a different outlook.
But he is not someone who likes surprises. Like, we have, like, a strict no surprises rule on the wedding because he's like, look, like, I can't, like, I'm not going to enjoy this. Like, the first look of it all, of, like, he has no idea what it looks like, and then I show up on the day. He's like, what if I hate it? And not that he would. Like, I don't think that, but...
But he's a man with specific tastes.
Yeah, and he has opinions.
Yeah, he
it's
does.
It's not like a thing of like all dresses look the same. Like he does not feel that way.
Right.
At all.
I'm wondering if Chris would care. He is becoming more discerning in his older age.
I know.
Ugly. Him to me. That looks ugly.
Ugly. Oh, no, it's crazy. So when I put on an outfit, I'm sometimes like, okay. This is, you've crossed the line now. He feels so comfortable being like, that is not working for you. And I'm like.
Men are chasing me down the road.
Yeah.
And like, you think
you don't know what you have at home. You don't know what you have. Two more times like that and I walk.
And I'm out.
And I'm out of here.
Whoa.
I know.
Okay, so you like the tux.
I love the tux, but mostly I love the tux salesman. This young man is everything you'd want. He's like 6'5".
Stop.
Gorgeous. Ugh. Can work a room.
Wait, on a scale of 1 to man at the cold plunge singing Usher Climax.
He's up. Yeah.
He's there?
He's there. No, he's no. like.
That so, man was a fox.
I know. No, he is so gorgeous. He should not. He shouldn't be indoors ever. He should just be outside. He wants to be an actor. And there is a devastating like spin here because we have gone to see him a couple of times now. Drew and Julia know him, our friends, Steven's best friends. They went with him initially to like try on suits for the very first time. Met this man. We're like, you have to meet this man. We all went back like 3 days later to try on them again. This was last year.
Whoa.
And then we've returned to him. And there is, it's a bittersweet thing because he told us when we saw him last year, he was applying to Juilliard. And he was like, you won't see me again. I'm out of here. I'm going to go to Juilliard. And then that'll be my plan. I'll be in New York. But he's still here.
So it was like,
he didn't get in. He didn't get in.
Did you ask?
No. I was too afraid to. It felt like asking about someone's like recently deceased parent. Like, are you sad?
Well, you know who went to Juilliard? Laura Lee. From the first season of Vanderpump Rules. And the infamous Gossip Girl episode where she got her hair burned off by whatever cocktail that Blair threw at her or Serena threw at her or something. Or one of the minions.
Yeah.
One cameo. And so if that's what Juilliard gets you, then, you know, do you even need Juilliard?
I don't think he needs it. I think that he's got charisma to fill a tank and he's going to be just fine.
I think there is like a whole movement at the moment of how necessary is college, period.
I think unnecessary. Honestly, I wouldn't recommend it.
I don't quite know what I took away.
No.
Like mild adeptness at Premiere Pro.
Yeah.
Some lifelong friendships.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it.
I had a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun.
Both in class. Like I took Same. Fun classes. I enjoyed myself, loved the dorms, got very close to the family that had a sandwich shop across the way. They're coming to my wedding.
No, they're not. Are they really?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Okay, so relationships will last a lifetime.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
But other than that, career-wise, do you feel like...
No, it was just really one professor that was like, this is how you file an invoice after you turn in a freelance story. This is how you pitch a freelance story. And honestly, like those things... practically useful, taught me everything I know, but outside of her.
So what we're saying is drop out.
drop out, honestly.
No, but you know when you meet people who have been like born and raised in like London, New York, Los Angeles, and are still there, they are light years ahead of all of us.
Yeah.
And that is because the grunt work has been put in when they have the most energy, when they're running around town as literal teenagers. And then they know everyone. They've got a strong network. They're just good to go. And that, I mean, that in and of itself, it's like if you come out of high school and move straight to a big city, you kind of go to leg up.
I agree. I would agree with that.
I know.
Oh, God.
I mean, education is important.
Do you know how expensive it is also right now?
I mean, that's what I...
Do you know, like, how much money it costs to go to a four-year private college?
Okay, so it is... Is it 40 a semester?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, like 80 a year, 90 a year, 100 a year is like...
And that's like if you're going to like Tulane, not if you're going to Harvard.
No, I don't even... I can't imagine what Harvard costs.
Do you still have a fantasy about attending an Ivy?
Yeah, that's unfortunately... That will live on in me where it's sort of... But it's so funny how many steps would have had to happen for me to make that happen. It's like, you were never going to go, honey. You couldn't read. You couldn't read for the first couple years of your life. Yeah. Like you were behind.
The literacy component, it does have sway.
Be real. Just be real.
I think it was because we were raised on Gilmore Girls and Legally Blonde. Yep. We never stood a chance. Like, no. We never stood a chance. The way that I think millennials, elder Gen Zs as a whole, have been tricked, bamboozled by the system into thinking, like, work your way from the bottom up and accept like terrible treatment, like all of it.
They lied.
Spend thousands of dollars on college and then come out with massive credit card debt and student loans. Like it was all...
That's not how you start a life. In the negatives already?
I know. In the red.
I know.
No, it's hard to reconcile.
Yeah.
And now we're unlearning all those ways.
Yeah. My God.
But speaking of a very intelligent woman.
Someone who has no problems doing things like the unconventional way, sort
of. No way. And bucking tradition in a way that causes a lot of drama. Always causes drama. She's never been without controversy.
Yeah. And I wonder why that is, because the impression that I get is that she has a heart of gold.
For sure.
Like, is just really good. A sweetheart.
Yeah, I think that's right. But also so ethereal and so not of this world that it feels criminal to bring her down to human level.
Yeah.
We're talking today Lana Del Rey.
Of course. I think
Angel Among Us.
I think that we're both really struggling with the fact that we're not at Coachella to see her.
Oh, yeah. This one's hit me harder than anyone ever.
I actually really hate the word FOMO. I think it's like really, it bums me out.
It's damaging. It's reductive.
It's annoying to hear.
Yep.
Like auditorily. I don't like it. But I understand it now. I understand it better now.
Seeing her on that motorcycle,
mm-mm,
on a biker gang, just waving royally. Also, what was so tough for me, and I feel kind of fucked up for saying this, so I'm just going to come out with it. But because I want to say the Ozempic has been Ozempicking so hard, it was like stepping back in time to a completely different Lana Del Rey. The Lana that I was raised by, almost. Yeah. Like, she looked like Lana from 2012, 2013, which ironically is the exact era we're going back to with this profile. And it just ignited such a fierce nostalgia in me that I almost like couldn't handle it. It was too much because it felt like I was 19 again and seeing this girl, like my idol, my icon, and being introduced to her and falling in love with her. To see someone that looks exactly the same, it's kind of like the Christina Aguilera effect right now.
Yes.
Is totally surreal. And that's kind of what it was. Had she been like the slightly bigger, more mature Lana that like we've become accustomed to in the past few years, I think I might not have been hit as hard, because I would have been like, totally, like, she looks great and this is where she's at right now in life. Like, we all grow up. It was like time had stood still.
Yeah.
And that's what fucked with me so hard. It was Ride era, which was 10 years ago this year, and she's on a motorbike and she's waving at fans, and I have literal chills.
I have chills too.
It was hard for me.
Yeah.
It was hard for me. And I mean, I have heard reviews from people that are like, if you were a Lana fan, you were having a transcendental experience. If you were not a Lana fan, you're kind of just swaying in a massive crowd of people and being like, this is very long and pretty sad. But I mean, the Billie Eilish of it all was incredible.
I know.
It just looked beautiful in every way, and she looked gorgeous in every way.
Yeah.
And she was on fire.
Yeah. I feel the exact same way. She held me at a time that I was growing up.
Yeah.
I remember video games so viscerally. I remember crying,
yeah,
like single teardrop in my room to that song.
I can't tell you how deep I was in it.
I believe you. I know. Yeah, I know that.
I was introduced to Lana in 2010 or 11 because a very cool friend of mine said, you kind of look like this girl.
Oh.
And I was like, does she go to our school? Like literally. Oh my God. And then discovered all the old Lizzie Grant video games, shook me to my core.
Yeah.
Born to Die is an album, listened to on repeat, learned Yayo on the guitar, played it to my parents. Made my entire art project, which is when you have to paint a full board with various different images. Literal copies of photos of her. Yep. With this old school Americana theme. I went on a vacation, cut together an iMovie set to Young and Beautiful. Like, I was...
You're walking down the aisle to that song.
Oh, yeah. The instrumental.
Yeah.
Shh, everyone.
Yeah.
That's for your ears only.
Yeah.
Don't spread that around. But I just was shook. I was in deep. I was really, really, really in deep.
Yeah.
And it kind of ebbed and flowed as time went on with how much I loved her albums at the time. But for years, it was like my only celebrity comparison. And I just like was so, and because I found her to be so beautiful, like I was so obsessed with that element of like us having a unique connection when there is no connection. There is no connection. I mean, outside of my boyfriend, you know, cheating on me and me finding out during her show, side of stage.
I thought about that every day since you said that. Every day. I've told other people as if it happened to me. I'm like, and then imagine you're side stage.
Yep.
And you see that message come through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was totally cinematic. Like, I could have been on a reality show in that moment. It was giving Scandoval.
Yeah.
In every way. But I love this woman. And she's always been so unashamedly herself. And I cannot tell you how jealous I am of our interviewee today, Melissa Giannini, who was on the ground in Lana Del Rey's home in 2013 in the aftermath of the SNL performance. Hanging out with Lana while she's smoking Paul Malls and talking about her 6'5 boyfriend, who was certainly 5'11.
I know Beatrice did the research.
I went down a rabbit hole. I was obsessed.
The truth is coming out today.
It is. And there's nothing left to do but to welcome Melissa. I cannot wait. Let's get into Lana.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, wait, are we starting?
We're rolling. Yeah. But first of all, we need to say an official welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. This profile, I was just saying offline, informed my entire identity. There's a moment where she talks about her decor aesthetic for the next few years. I based my first apartment on, I think it was south of France, 70s.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, no, it was a really special piece for me as well, like for a lot of different reasons. So it's really nice to hear that it had like an impact on other people. And I feel like of all the, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and of all the pieces I've written, that actually is the one that comes up occasionally that was like sort of impactful, which is kind of funny because it was my first, I think, official cover story for like a national magazine. So
no way, that keeps happening where we have guests on and then find out live that it was their first cover story, and I feel like that makes it all the more special
and crazy that we managed to stumble upon them as well.
Yeah,
like that's what we gravitate towards and find. It must be like the care that's put into it.
Yeah,
I mean, I did really care about this story. Yeah. And I worked so hard on it. I think my initial draft was like 5,500 words or something. Like I just like plopped it on the desk, you know, like here's my masterpiece. And then they ended up being like, okay, cut off this whole anecdote about you being in a country western bar. They're like, let's just start where you're on the porch with Lana. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
We'd love to start with how you got the assignment.
At the time, I was a senior editor at Nylon. It came out in November of 2013. So I think I was writing it in September. So I was a senior editor, so I was like not in like the whole like management meetings or anything like that, but I had been kind of like sort of nudging people saying like, hey, I think, you know, this, she would make a good cover for a while. And so at some point, like something switched, I don't know what, but they decided, oh, you know, we do want to put her on the cover and we want you to write it. And I had a honeymoon trip planned for, my husband and I were going to go to California in September.
Okay, not honeymoon and Lana. That's too on the nose.
I know. So it all like it felt very serendipitous. So my boss was like, so what do you say? Like maybe you just, you know, head out there a couple days early. Then you can interview Lana and then, you know, go off on your honeymoon. And like, and I was like, oh, perfect. You know, it's like, that sounds great. So I did. My husband was like just a tiny bit annoyed because it sort of delayed our trip a little bit. And then also I was like thinking about Lana nonstop, like during our honeymoon, but you know, it's okay. You know,
That feels right.
Yeah, it did. It did. And he understood. I mean, I'm like, you know, workaholic, and I was at that time.
I can't believe she was your idea. Why did you think she was so special, special enough to warrant a cover? Because I can't believe that came from you.
I mean, my whole career, I think I've just been kind of drawn to people who are sort of like misunderstood maybe, or sort of like misinterpreted. And I think, I mean, at that time she really was, I mean, there was, it was still like, yeah. So she had put out Born to Die, and then like the, was it the Paradise,
like deluxe edition.
Yeah. So those were like the two things that she had out. And this SNL thing had happened, and like people were still really stuck on that, that performance that was maybe not perfect. But and I don't know, it was such a weird time. I mean, it's always been kind of a weird time for women in music, but I feel like especially then there was like this, it feels weird to even describe it now, but like there was like this question of her like authenticity, and like I don't really understand why, because like, I mean, throughout history, like every musician has like a persona, you know, I mean, it's kind of boring if you don't.
Totally. I think it was the intersection of social media. Do you feel like it was that going on in tandem? Because you're definitely so right. Like Bowie, Madonna, like none of them are ever being entirely authentic. They're always adapting, like chameleons. And I think she was following that trajectory, but it happened to coincide with people being like, let's take a selfie
and be real.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Cause 2013, that was like very much like Instagram kind of was popping off. Yeah. It's funny. I have an Instagram picture with Lana where, yes. And it's kind of embarrassing because, you know, she, like when I went to her house, she would just, you know, looked pretty normal, you know, like, cause most people don't have full glam, you know, when they're just hanging out. And so I was like, let's take a picture. And I usually don't do that, but for some reason it like felt right. And, maybe because Instagram was just like starting or whatever. And I saw like over, like on her, like on a hook or something, there was like this flower crown, and I'm like, oh, can you please put it on?
Stop. Oh my God.
Wait, I'm obsessed.
This is
you.
Like unearthing like a relic from another era. It's all there.
Yes. Yes. And so she had this like flower crown on, and then she's so sweet. You know, she just was totally game. And I'm just like looking like I had cut my bangs that morning. They're all crooked.
No.
And then she has this flower crown on. It's like it's the most ridiculous photo, and it's all like filtered to the max, you know.
So, wait, Melissa, will you send it to us?
I will send it. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that is the Lord's work. You did telling Lana Del Rey to put on her flower crown.
I actually have full body chills, and Beatrice can attest that I'm not lying.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. So it starts on the porch. You walk in. Yeah. Actually, we should read a little bit of the intro.
Yeah, it's a kick so us good. Off
because it's also so good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where I'm at now calls for a cigarette. Lana Del Rey decides with a laugh, drawing a Pall Mall from a pack and lighting it. Casually dressed in faded jean shorts, a chambray shirt and brown loafers, her dark auburn hair piled on top of her head and held with a clip. The sad core soul singer of video games fame might pass for the prettiest girl in high school. The one everyone assumed was aloof but was probably just shy. The one who, yep, Facebook confirms it, is still pretty. Were it not for a pair of lush, red carpet-ready lashes casting shadows across her cheeks with each blink.
Oh,
I'm there. I'm in it.
I'm smelling the Pall Mall wafting in the air.
Yeah. It was interesting because it was like, a little bit of context. So I'd gone to LA. I was staying at the Standard, which was like, I don't know. I don't think it exists anymore.
Yeah.
I tried to stay there recently and it just was gone. So I was at this country Western bar when I landed, maybe you've been there. I don't know. It was like this very Lana.
To the one in West Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. It has like a mechanical bowl.
Very famous, cool Gen Z spot now. Like the TikTok crowd go there and ride the bull. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So, but at the time I was like, I think I was jet lagged. I was just trying to like get my bearings or whatever. And I went over there and had like, it was the middle of the day. So I had like a mimosa or something like that felt like appropriate. I don't know why. But there were like all these like older gentlemen just kind of like day drinking. And the sun was like, it was very dark, but there was like this one like sunbeam with like the dust motes. It was very like, it felt very Lana for some reason. And then like all of a sudden, there was like this ruckus, and it, the entire staff of like TMZ started like piling in. And so like everyone's on the bull and it got really loud, and I'm like, and then I get a text saying like, oh, this is the address where we want you to meet her. And I was like, okay, shielding it from all the TMZ people because I didn't want them to like know where she was living. I didn't have a car, so I got like a Uber. Uber existed back then. I don't even know. I got a cab or something to the house. And this was like the house that she had recently bought, and it was like still being like renovated and stuff. But anyway, so I get there and there are these people like on the roof just like throwing down the tiles, and I'm like, where is she? And they're like, lady, you want to come in here? And I'm like, yeah, because there was like the security guard like driving by like, what is this woman doing? And so I like walk in and I almost fall in her pool because like it's covered and I didn't see it, and I'm just like wandering through this like construction site. And then I get another text and they're like, oh, change of plans. What? So like her manager comes and gets me, pulls up in this like BMW with like a bunch of coffees, and he's like, just get in. And so then he like takes me like zooming through like Hollywood Hills up into this other house, this rental that she was staying in.
Right.
And I guess she stayed there for a while. I think she filmed a video there maybe. There's one where there's like a balcony. I can go look it up. She opens the door and she just is like this really beautiful woman. And I know that that's sort of like a cliche of profiles to be like, oh, she looks normal or whatever, but she really did. And like, I was really expecting this like bombshell, like iconic figure, because that's kind of how she presented herself, like in, you know, most of the time. But yeah, she just looked like a pretty girl from high school. And yeah, so we kind of were chatting in like the little kitchen area with this like skylight for a while, and then she's like, yeah, let's go outside. And then yeah, the smoking commenced. But she kind of like was joking like, you know, oh, these are my boyfriends or whatever, I'm not a real smoker or something, which was cute. And that was when she was dating that guy Barry from the Scottish band. I can't remember the name of, but yeah.
Any Lana Del Rey fan will probably tell you the Barry relationship specifically is lore, because the entirety of Ultraviolence, I think that album,
yeah.
I mean, that relationship lasted so long and they were photographed together so much, but mm-hmm. I was telling Ivana about it and I was like talking about this relationship and the way that she elevates the men in her life who I think if we were mm-hmm. to see them at a bar would be like, okay.
Yeah.
And to her, like that, like deity, like figures are so beautiful. And it struck me, her mention of like, if you see these two 6'5" giants walking around, it's my brother, Charlie, and my boyfriend, Barry. And I turned to Ivana and I said, her boyfriend is no taller than 5'11". And it's just such a perfect kind of metaphor for the way that she sees the men in her life as like literally larger than life.
Yeah. I mean, like that's kind of her whole thing. And it's funny too, because like on the ride out there with her manager, he was saying like, oh, you know, anything is on the table except don't talk about her relationship. Like she doesn't want to talk about her, you know, personal romance, whatever. And like, I was like, okay, that's cool. But then like immediately, like she was just like right off the bat was like, oh yeah, that's where he is right there in that window. Like he's going to come out any second. And like, so she wanted to talk about it for sure.
I have to know, what was her energy like your first impression of her once you started talking and spent, you know, a little bit of time with her? What is it like to be in her presence? I feel like everybody wants to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was very kind of quiet, but like thoughtful, you know, like very, she like would think about what she was going to say before she said it. And then also kind of, she would be like, oh, should I have said that? You know, but I think she was very, I hate the word articulate, but that made sense because like you could tell that she was like, she's like a searcher, like a thinker, you know, she thinks a lot about life and about the meaning of life and like, you know, there was like one point in the story, I was rereading it yesterday, where she talks about how like she talked a lot about Lolita and how like much she loved it. And she's like, maybe I shouldn't be talking about how much I love this book because it's very, you know, kind of disturbing in a way. And she's like, I'm just very comfortable with like, I guess, messiness or like of human nature. And I just found her very thoughtful. And I think there was sort of this impression of her as being like this kind of ditzy, and that's just not.
I think the portrait you render of her in this is so fascinating because she does have such a close relationship with philosophy, and because she was such a mystery at this moment, It feels like this was the first time someone truly drew back the veil, Coachella reference not intended, to be like, who is this woman and how did we get here? And I kind of wanted to give a little bit of background because I think there's a lot of misconceptions around her still. But I think from what this profile teaches us, she grew up pretty decidedly middle class. Parents worked in advertising, moved their family up to Lake Placid. And this whole concept of the trailer park, self-styled stuff, she got her first record deal, made $10K, and then was like, where's cheap to live close to the city while I finish my degree? And so she moved into a trailer park and was just making music before signing to new management, going to London and creating what would go on to be Born to Die. But there's so much mysticism around her and people think she was almost like cosplaying the poor girl and like trailer trash in quotation marks. And obviously because of her Americanism and how much that is woven into her music, it's like there's just no artist really like her, I think, who has been put under the microscope in this way of like, tell the truth. Who are you really? And what I find even more interesting is how you kind of unpack her relationship to icons and how much that American iconography like filters into who she is. You write, she points to pictures of Kurt Cobain and the Virgin Mary lining the Baby Grand's music rack. It's clear the singer has a thing for icons, but she says it's a coincidence that her lifelong heroes happen to be the most famous people in the world. I just thought Elvis was the most handsome person I had ever seen. I thought I was the only one who knew. And and you do kind of get this impression. It's like you are walking through her house with her. There's an enormous framed print of Jackie Kennedy with a little Marilyn Monroe in the corner. And you're just kind of like, okay, like this woman bleeds red, white, and blue. It's just, it's like fascinating how much she has invested into what American culture has deemed the heroes, royalty.
And I loved the bit of connecting it to her growing up in this vacation town and really brushing shoulders with this idea of the American dream. I think it really, at least for me, because I know Beatrice is like the Lana historian between the two of us. And I experienced her in that I remember listening to video games and crying in my room. And I didn't really get to know what was behind the person. Like, I only knew the caricature that people talk about. And so I really do feel like this I see the history here now, and I see where the inspiration lies, and it seems to all be authentic, to your point earlier of how everyone was like, be authentic.
Fan or no fan, I find this to be like incredibly important work on one of the last like cultural icons that we can really point to. I think the music industry is also in a crisis right now because they can't achieve this type of buzz around new artists because they're having to be so forthcoming and making a TikTok around every song. So this isn't happening the same way it is now, where it feels DIY and organic, and yet it's crafting like a persona that people can really cling on to. It's so fascinating how the way that you oscillate from her being totally ethereal and out of this world to her being like, yeah, we're terrible neighbors, we never bring the bins in, and everybody hates us, and like to bring her back down to earth in this way. Okay, so how long were you hanging out at the house?
Like a few hours. I mean, we definitely like traveled, you know, we were by the pool, we were on the balcony, we were on the patio, and then we were in like her living room, and kind of she gave me like a whole tour of the place, maybe longer, I don't know. It wasn't like one of those things where like sometimes with interviews you have like a hard in, hard out kind of thing. It was more of just, it was very loose, which I don't think happens very much anymore, which is sad. But it was one of her like first like covers. I think they thought that this was like an important story, so they wanted to give me enough time to like really get to the bottom of it, you know, which was really nice. And I think also maybe because it was my first one and I was like super nervous that like maybe she didn't feel like intimidated by me. So she kind of let me just, maybe she felt sorry for me. I don't know.
I'm also fascinated that she was sober and is possibly still sober.
Yeah.
That's wild. She got sober at 18 after she went to boarding school in Connecticut and was obviously living out debauchery. This is what makes us girls coded.
Yeah.
I realized only in reading this, because she talks about every sensory experience in her lyrics, She never talks about booze, which is fascinating. It's never like whiskey swirling around the glass, which you think would be like ripe to mine in terms of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yes, like this is another thing that this taught me. And then she started to volunteer at homeless and drug and alcohol rehab programs while she was attending Fordham in the Bronx as a teenager. Yeah. She's very special. Like how many teens do you know who get sober and then
are like called to service? Very few. Very, very few.
Could not be us.
The community in mind. Like, did she feel wise beyond her years?
I just found there's so many dichotomies around her where like the very literal like Jackie O and Marilyn.
Kind of thing.
But then also just like, yeah, like the fact that she lives in this like very glamorous like Hollywood Hills home, but then won't take the trash bins out or whatever. You know, like it's just like I was trying to get that across. She's like very relatable. And I think, I mean, now every cover story like has to go viral, you know, for whatever reason. And there was nothing really like super juicy, like reveals like clicky. Or anything.
Yeah.
But what people picked up on, but it did sort of go viral in a way because the fact that she said like she didn't think she had another album in her, you know. And to me, like the way I understood that was kind of like, you know, she just has like writer's block, you know, which is like very normal. But then people went off with it and they're like, oh, she's done. This is the end of Lana Del Rey or whatever. Mm. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that the whole like trailer park thing was a little bit of a show or whatever. But it was also just like she was curious about that aspect of American culture. And also, I guess she really liked like Metal Boys or something. I don't know. Yeah. Like that's why she moved to Jersey, I guess, supposedly. It was just like what she's curious about and what she's interested in, and she enjoyed it. And she also was talking about she was like couch surfing. I mean, yeah, maybe they were like upper middle class, but like I don't think it was the kind where like, you know, certain people in New York, their rent is paid for and like are rich. You know? Yeah.
And that's what I think she's always tried to clarify, which is like so interesting because that was one of the biggest critiques lobbed at her was like, you are a little rich girl whose daddy like bought her way into the music industry. And that's just objectively not true. And I think the only thing that she's come out against.
Yeah. No, I think she definitely, you know, did it. When you want to live that life and you want to, I mean, you can't really afford to like have a big fancy apartment, you know, because she wanted to learn about philosophy and she wanted to play in the bars and write songs and be an artist. So get a trailer. I mean, she was living the life.
You mentioned how articulate she was, and we weren't in the industry at this particular juncture. So I was interested if celebrities in this moment, or specifically Lana, felt aware that their words could be pulled out, tweeted, and turned into like little clicky headlines, or if that predated that time.
I think definitely there was an awareness. I mean, I think like, I don't know, I also just recently watched a screening of the Amy Winehouse film.
Oh my God.
How was it? Can you say?
I don't think I can say.
Okay, that's fine.
God damn.
But yeah, there was like a point in there where she was talking about like, you know, telling her father that she had a problem and wanted to go to rehab or whatever. And he's like, oh, you've never actually said it out loud. And she's like, well, I never had to because like, you know, the press basically told me I have a problem. And, you know, like I think there was like an awareness in that time, an awareness of like your words will get twisted. So you should be very conscious of what you say. And there was like where she was kind of like going back on certain things, like saying like, oh, maybe I am like a little bit weird, you know, to say this. I don't think that I twisted her words. I think some of the feedback I got from her team were like, oh, yeah, you really like captured who she really is, you know, and that was kind of rare.
That you never get that feedback.
That's so sweet.
That's really special. Wow. And especially with an enigma.
Yeah. Like and she wasn't even the only famous person you interviewed for this. Some of your secondary sources, I'm obsessed with the Jamie King.
Oh, yeah.
In like her Heart of Dixie moment and how she was obsessed with Lana almost organically and found out she was playing a show at the Chateau Marmont and was like, I am running over. When she heard the singer was performing a small show at the Chateau Marmont, she rushed over after shooting an episode of Heart of Dixie. Oh. Got there too late. I know. She was walking out as I was walking in, and that's how we met, King says. The two ran into each other a few more times in LA over the next few months. It was like the universe brought us together, and it makes sense because she's like a sister to me. I'm pregnant right now, and having her by my side through this process has been so important to me. There's something very calming about her presence.
That's so interesting to me as well because Jamie King is such an American icon in her own right. I'm mm-hmm. just imagining being Lana and mixing with people that you have idolized and immortalized in music. And obviously Jamie yeah. would go on to star in her videos and so on and so forth. But it must have been such a surreal and bizarre experience for her as well, because like that's the thing. She platformizes these people and they want to mm-hmm. befriend her. And it's almost like mm-hmm. you can't or you shouldn't. You know, like you shouldn't befriend her. Like, let her be the outsider that she feels. Yeah. You know?
I yeah. know. And Jamie King pays her such a big compliment in saying that she is like the Jim Morrison of her time. Yeah. That most female pop stars have like a full machine behind them. And everything that she writes, I think King says, comes from the depths of her heart and her soul. I mean, what a compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's sort of understood now. But at the time, it was sort of like, oh, you know, because like I think everyone just assumed that she was sort of manufactured by these like lawyers and managers.
Yeah. You write that her family interchangeably calls her Lizzie yeah. and Lana and back again. There are so many sentences, there are so many nuggets here that you could almost mm-hmm. skip over them, but for a fan, it's just it's such an exciting peek behind the curtain that you just don't get to see. Like, I think that's something I would be so interested in, is like the friends and family close to her. Her full name is obviously like Elizabeth Woolridge Grant. Are they mm-hmm. calling her Liz, you know, mm-hmm. or are they calling her Lana? And there's so many things like that about her that fascinate me. I think around this time, she developed this really close friendship with James Franco, and he mm-hmm. ended up publishing a book about her, but they never had a romantic relationship because she wasn't interested yeah. in him. And like yeah. stuff like that, you talk about her being a walking contradiction. You would imagine the beautiful, glamorous siren would end up with the like, hot brooding movie star of that time, and yet she yeah. was kind of like, I would rather go with Barry. You know, it's like, she's just fascinating.
Yeah.
She's someone I'm desperate to understand, and I'm wondering if you would like to meet her again and like revisit her at this moment in her life.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think the Coachella thing, I mean, does feel like sort of a return in a way. Like the imagery, like everything was kind of sort of like her own like era's performance or whatever. Like it all kind of felt like it came together. Were you guys there? I think I heard that you were maybe going.
Okay. No. You're bringing up a very sore point right now. Honestly, we wanted to go, and then mm-hmm. I don't really have many friends who love pop. And yeah. it was such a pop festival this year between yeah. Doja, Lana, Sabrina Carpenter.
You like apologizing. I'm making excuses.
Putting out a statement.
You're like, listen. I'm not proud of how I acted.
But I honestly, like, I cried, and my boyfriend like held me and was like, I'm so sorry, B. And he was like, we should have done it. I really, really should have, because my last liner experience, which I've told before, was absolutely marred by a cheating boyfriend. It was the last time I saw her live. So I really need to experience it. But I really wanted to read your closing paragraph, which I think really sums it all up so perfectly. It's clear that no matter what Del Rey decides to do next, she will continue to fascinate and inspire more myth-making. It's important to have a good relationship with yourself when you become well-known, she says. People will say a lot of things and you'll start to wonder if they're true. But then you have to go back to all those little truths and kernels you found along the way that remind you, you are where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And
it's
so good.
It's so true. Like this is a woman who's been created. She's a sum of her experiences. Mm-hmm. And she's not who we know when video games hit Tumblr or hit YouTube. She mm-hmm. is the girl who is singing in church choir and then attending school in the Bronx and commuting from her trailer park in Jersey. She has like really carved her own path both in and out mm-hmm. of the music industry, and like the way that she's held on to that, and it rings clear through the music. Thank you for sharing with us, and thank you for sharing this 10 years ago now.
Yeah, oh man.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you. This was a joy.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really fun.
Okay. It is no surprise to me that she is 27 at the time of this profile.
No, and also J-Lo was 27.
Oh my.
It feels like a real pivotal shift where you're either stepping into your power or you're afraid of it.
I think that it seems, at least for me in my experience, it's the year where everything breaks down so that it can
rebuild
back up again. And I just have never experienced it, except for I remember that I had older friends at 27 who would come to me and be like, I'm having 27, 28, 29 Saturn return years, I guess.
Yeah.
That would come to me and be like, I'm moving. I'm
breaking up with my
boyfriend. Yep. I just got fired from my job. Everything is belly up. And I would be like, oh my God, like, I'm so sorry. I am doing fine as a 24-year-old, but I wish you peace.
Yeah.
It seems awful. Oh my God. And I remember thinking like, what is going on?
By me, by that age, I'll be fine, obviously. Yeah. But like, I'm so sad to hear about your strife.
Yes.
I'm going to be fine though.
Yeah. And not the case.
Well, the Jim Morrison of it all, the Amy Winehouse, the Kurt Cobain.
I know.
It's tough with the 27 mark. Especially being in the public eye. And she would break up with Barry pretty soon after this and move on to many other men, frankly, totally unworthy of her time.
Yeah.
She is in a relationship right now, I think, and possibly engaged.
Not with the police officer.
No. That's well gone. Yeah. That's well gone. In fact, it was rumored that he got married while she was in couples therapy, with her in couples therapy. That I would have to fact check. Oh my God. Like a niche throwaway comment on a live show. Where she just like ad-libbed a song and was like, actually, you fucking got married. So I'm obsessed with it. Remember how she put a billboard up for a new album only in his town? She's so diabolical in that way. And, you know, she's a Cancer Gemini cusp. Like she is going to be, she's going to come for your children.
Yeah. And she's going to feel with a capital F.
Exactly right. And now we're seeing a huge pivot for her. I mean, she's coming out with her country album in September. I think it's called Lasso. And that's her 10th album. Can you believe that? Ten albums.
Wow.
I know.
It's the year of country. It's yeehaw year.
Is it what?
And thank God I got my boots ready.
We're up to Nashville.
Thrifted them in Albuquerque and now I'm ready to go.
Yeah, no, dude. I don't know why we're all yeehawing so hard. Maybe it's because we need something simple.
I know. I think it's like we're going backwards.
I never asked you, but did you like the Beyoncé album?
I do. I don't. I really like it. There are a couple songs that I absolutely love. And then there are a lot of songs that I like that are okay.
Yeah.
But I love country music like Dolly Parton. I'm listening to Dolly Parton all the time. All the time. I'm listening to like the Patsy Cline's, the like Loretta Lynn's, like I'm a country girl.
Wow, you off to Stagecoach?
Honestly, I'm like, I'll go alone. That seems fun as hell to me.
It's really weird how genres of music pick up to such an insane extent almost overnight. I mean, last year was really like when it felt like house music hit the mainstream in such a way that pissed off a lot of OG house fans. And then before that, it was hip hop, which used to be kind of a subversive genre and then became Migos.
Yeah.
And it's just wild to see how we oscillate between genres and dip in and out of like what is cool. And it's not even specific to artists. It's the fact that like Luke Bryan right now is carrying his fucking label, like not Blackpink, like Luke Bryan.
Yeah.
So it's just like the most fascinating thing. But Lana being at Interscope, obviously same label as Billie. Same label as, who else is it in the scope that's major? Not Ariana. Oh, Taylor.
Oh my God.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
You know, they've got all the biggies and there's a connection there between all these like big pop female powerhouses. She's just, her staying power is such a testament, not only to her talent, but her kind of commitment to the bit, which has proven to be not a bit as time has gone on. That was the biggest drama at the time, is that she was so inauthentic.
Yeah. Ugh, people love to claim that. They're like, you couldn't possibly be like this. And you know what? She is. She is like this.
And I feel like I have something to share. My final essay at university, speaking of college, we're bringing it full circle today.
We always do this.
Was about authenticity in pop music. And as examples, I pulled her, Miley Cyrus, and Drake, which can you believe? We're literally 11 years on and these people are still top of mind.
I know.
But I wrote, this is so insane. Lana Del Rey, formerly Lizzie Grant, emerged as a lush 50s sex siren, an indie aura that seemed too good to be true, a rare statement of creative ownership. Del Rey became an indie pop hybrid queen. Independents were also capitalizing on the internet and its power to circumvent traditional industry intermediaries and consumer authority.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
She's a genius.
She's a genius. She's a writer.
The platform the internet provides for fan interaction also increases the perceived authenticity of the artist. Lana Del Rey capitalized on its power, skyrocketing to fame as a result. Her first single, a grainy homemade music video, seemingly self-released on YouTube, appeared to be the very definition of authenticity, echoing the very same DIY ethic that made the Riot Girl movement so popular, with a more palatable message. With this, Lana tapped into a pervasive market and alternative appetites. Her accelerated commercial success spurred several of the latter to investigate the self-proclaimed Nancy Sinatra.
Because we should post this on the Patreon.
Maybe we should, because there is so much here.
No, it's completely relevant. Also, we've done every single person that you talk about as an episode.
Well, it's, I mean, that's what's so insane. It's talking kind of about her reinvention. Okay, one last thing. Had Del Rey identified herself as a pop artist, the backlash to the details of her manufactured identity may not have been so severe, but her music and image had become inextricably woven with indie culture and thus its authenticity. Whereas the indie artists should appear unquestionably real and allow their music to inspire imagination, Del Rey had chosen to create her own brand along with the aesthetic trappings needed to function in pop, a la Katy Perry or Lady Gaga, but without the transparency. Also, because Lana Del Rey's music and her aura were so intertwined, one could not be taken seriously without the other. Thus, she was denied her creative genius, inauthentic to work within the indie alternative sphere, but highly authentic for pop music.
Oh my God. I mean, one nail on the pulse.
Okay, I couldn't even write this with ChatGPT now. The way that my mind is mush... And I have none of this anymore. I don't have this in me.
No. I actually, it's so funny you say this. I recently also found an old essay of mine and I read it like I was like, oh, genius. The symbolism of blood in William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury.
Okay.
Okay. What?
Write a thesis.
I know.
Wow. This is crazy, but this is so true.
Yeah.
The controversy was solely rooted in the fact that she was an indie darling. And when reality, she's always been a pop star. And the brand was the brand, but it was also her. She was one in it together, as was kind of Lady Gaga, as is Beyonce. Like, they are all truly one with the brand. It's always derived from something deeply true. And then... exaggerated.
Yeah. And no one was on Tumblr like she was on Tumblr. There was such a saturation in the spaces where indie kids lived. It was all Lana.
And she got everyone. She got The Weeknd. She got A$AP Rocky. All the cool kids and hot guys of the moment became so immediately entranced by her. I mean, she was rumored to have dated them both.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, she was just like nothing we'd ever seen. And I think that was her victory and her crime. And we had to see her kind of come down in the end. But she's risen back up and she's riding into the sunset.
I love those stories. I can't wait.
That's you.
I can't
That's
wait for the country
week.
Album. I know, it is. It is me this week. We can survive a lot.
We are tenacious.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word.
Resilient.
Yep. If you can take anything from this episode, it's that you are capable of whatever you set your mind to.
Yeah. And if your life fell apart at 27, we'd love to hear from you. Comment, yep. Like, subscribe.
Write in. We're going to turn this into an advice podcast.
Yeah.
Because now we feel qualified.
Exactly. I think, yeah. I mean, after hearing what you wrote in your thesis, I think you could give some advice. I think you have the know-how.
Send in your cues.
Yeah.
Send them in.
That would be fun. A little Q&A episode.
That would be fun.
I wonder what people are wondering.
No one sends anything.
No one sends anything in. Or if they do, they're like, why have you gained weight?
Please DM us. I hope we get one.
I know.
I would love to answer a question.
Any question.
Any question.
We will answer any question.
Yeah.
Even if it, I mean, honestly, I feel like the more personal, the better. Let's go.
Please. And I get a lot of, from the Argos, really insightful pop cultural commentary.
Oh my God,
like,
yeah.
Incredible takes on our episode and like how they have then dissected the profile themselves, their own opinions. It's so interesting. So I feel like we should also incorporate that because people have fascinating insight into what's going on psychologically with some of these stars. And I'm truly obsessed. Thank you so much for reaching out after every episode and telling us your thoughts.
No, because
I've learned and I've seen the world a different way as a result. Yeah. I mean, it is literally anthropology at the end of the day.
I know.
We're out, Uggos. See you next week.
No, I was going to use the Lana Del Rey song.
Oh, do it. Let's see.
All I could think of was we're born to die, which can't be the way we end.
No, we have a lust for life.
There it is.
Yes.
And that's why.
So just ride.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Bye.
Uncover Girl is lovingly crafted by Beatrice Hazelhurst and Ivana Ryder. If you want to get even deeper under the covers with us, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/uncovergirl or follow us on Instagram at uncovergirlpodcast. Rate Uncover Girl, write us a review, and share your favorite episode, Shawn Mendes, Rolling Stone 2018, anyone? And we will be your forever fans. Love you.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.